Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Always nice to have you on board. I want to welcome the people from all over the world. We reach into every corner of the world, and I get a lot of feedback. And we are always trying to select the topics, the program, the insights, the information that can help you. The whole idea of this hour is empowerment. And as you'll see, we have a lot to share today that will empower you. Of course, the latest on health and healing, everything from how flax seeds plus astaxanthin can help lower your risk of a fatty liver. And we have a big problem with fatty liver disease in the United States, not due to alcohol. Also, better learning through zinc from Gothenburg University, that's in Sweden. And then we're going to look at how Alzheimer's disease is linked to the metabolism of unsaturated fats. What's that mean? I'll explain. Research from King's College London, published in PLOS Medicine. And a citrus compound protects against the effects of a high-fat diet. And this is from the Chung-Ang National Universities in Korea, as well as at Chuba University in Japan. So I'm going to explain how one single nutrient in all of citrus, oranges and lemons, kumquats, limes, grapefruit, how it can really help the fat in your diet not end up as fat in the body, on your belly. And also how the microbes in our body, not just our gut, evolved to colonize different parts of the human body, from Duke University and more. Then from our audio file today, we're going to finally hear that Irish young lady talk about how her life was destroyed by the human papilloma vaccine virus. Her name is Rebecca. It's only a minute and a half long. Also a very short animated video on nuclear weapons. And then the left is no longer liberal. You'll see what I mean from that. And if time permits, since I won't have a guest today, we will take your calls on a lot of different issues. So we have a power pack show, and we're going to begin. And our number to call in for our talk back is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. From the Chinese Academy of Agricultural Sciences, they looked at flaxseed oil. Now, flax seeds and flaxseed oil are two completely different issues when it enters the body. The flaxseed oil will become digestible very quickly. And by the way, it's always best to take turmeric or curcumin with an oil. The two oils I recommend are either coconut oil or flaxseed oil. Now, you could also get some benefit from the monounsaturated olive oil, but if you want to enhance the bioavailability, the utilization of curcumin, then I would suggest always taking it at the same time with an oil. And sometimes it comes in oil, which is ideal. In any case, flaxseed, if you eat it, for most people, I'm going to guesstimate about 95% will not be digested because it has a really tough outside. And it's not easily broken down. And if a lot of people have weak hydrochloric acid, and the older you get, the less hydrochloric acid your body produces, there's a high probability that it'll go right through your body undigested or only partially digested. However, when the flax seeds are pressed, hence they're crushed and the oil comes out, then you're getting 100% bioavailability. Now, there is a nutrient, and we find it in certain colored fruits. For example, in the cranberry, in the pomegranate, in the blueberry. Let me spell it for you. A-S-T-A-X-A-N-T-H-I-N. This nutrient, when you combine it with flaxseed oil, can help reduce the fat that's in your liver. And that's extremely important because we have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease at epidemic levels. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. And this can help bring down your cholesterol levels, your oxidative stress levels. It can help with all this, meaning it protects your liver. And the liver does two things. The liver helps detoxify all substances in the body and get them out. But it also helps to conjugate and bring together nutrients. For example, if you take vitamin C as ascorbic acid, it's converted into ascorbate. That's the form the body uses. If you take vitamin B6, pyridoxine, it creates a change in the chemistry in the liver, pyridoxal 5-phosphate, etc., and that's how it works. Folic acid becomes folate. So it's the liver that transforms whatever you've eaten into its usable form at the cell level. So we want to keep the liver healthy. And one of the things I have against most chemotherapy, there are some exceptions, like childhood leukemias and clear cell adenoma, testicular cancer, there are some success rates. But with 90% of all cancers with chemotherapy, you don't have any success. You just have destruction. And when they talk about people dying from the cancer, 50% of the people who received chemotherapy died from the treatment, not the cancer. In any case, the chemotherapy plays havoc with the liver. And keeping the liver clean and vital helps you with any disease, but particularly cancer. So you don't want that fat building up in the liver, and this helps prevent that. From Gothenburg University, they took a look at zinc. Now, we all know that zinc is a vital micronutrient involved in many cellular processes. For example, in learning and memory processes, it plays a role that is not yet understood. And by using nanoelectrical chemical measurements, researchers have made progress towards understanding how zinc actually influences the release of messenger molecules. Zinc changes the number of messenger molecules stored in the vesicles and the dynamics of their release from the cell. Zinc is a vital micronutrient involved in, for example, your memory. And this is what was shown in this report. So take your zinc, have better messenger molecules, the neurotransmitters. They're released from storage chambers, what are called synaptic vesicles, into the synaptic cleft, where they are recognized by neighboring nerve cells. And this release is based upon what are called excitocytosis. And the vesicle docks at the cell membrane, opens at the point of contact, releases part of its contents to the outside, closes and separates from the plasma membrane so it can be refilled. Sounds a little complicated, but just let's put it down to lay language. If you were to take zinc, not a lot, 15 to 20 milligrams a day, you could then improve this process by 27%. That means you're going to have better thinking capacity in the brain. And from King's College London comes research showing that how you metabolize fats can play a role in your brain. Here's what we know. There are a lot of fats that are just bad to the bone. Arachidonic fats, the trans fats, the highly saturated fat, with the exception of coconut oil. And the good fats, such as olive oil, flaxseed oil, almond oil, avocado oil, sesame oil, those are metabolized differently in the body. And your brain is made up of a lot of fat. So you want to make sure you're getting the right kind of fat. If you get the wrong kind of fat, it becomes pro-inflammatory. Corn oil, bad. Canola oil, I would not use it. The safflower and sunflower oils, I wouldn't use it because they're highly processed. And those actually cause oxidative stress in the brain, and that impairs you. And we have a lot of people with impaired brains. We have neurodegeneration disorders, which impair memory, and executive function in language. It accounts for up to 80% of total dementia cases. So we have a lot of people who've got aging brains, so let's do something to de-age them. And that is get rid of all the bad fats in the diet. Now, from Chung Ang National University in Korea and the Chuba University in Japan, they looked at long-term supplementation with a low dose, what is called a nobilitin. And this is a nutrient that reduces inflammation and improves insulin, affects insulin resistance and liver disease. So that's important. And this nutrient, which is occurring in the plant as a phenolic compound, a polymethyloxylated flavone that is found in oranges, lemons, and other citrus fruits, and it has enormous benefit to the body. It can help stabilize your blood sugar if you're hypoglycemic or suffer from prediabetes. So that's the deal. So what do we do with it? And this was published in Molecular Nutrition and Food Research. Most Americans are on a high-fat diet. That's bad. They're on a high-protein diet. That's bad. They're on a high-refined carbohydrate. That's bad diet. So by taking in the whole citrus, that means you will get organic oranges, lemons, limes, grapefruit. You wash them. If they're not purchased as organic, you can certainly use a spray on them, and that gets rid of an awful lot of the toxins because not everybody can afford organic. And then you chop it up into pieces and you juice the whole thing. Now, in some cases, it'll be a little bitter because the seeds are in there. They also have caprylic acid, which is great for eliminating parasites and bad bacteria in the intestine. But the skin and underneath the skin, that white pulpiness under the skin that nobody eats, that's rich in bioflavonoids. So you're getting all these wonderful nutrients, as well as this nobilitin, N-O-B-I-L-E-T-I-N. That's that natural compound. It's part of the phenolic compounds. But boy, it does a lot of good. Turns off inflammation and helps you with insulin, both of which are absolutely important. And one last thing from Duke University. I found this interesting because as the human species has evolved over the last 6 million years, our resident microbes did the same thing. They adapted to the vastly different conditions on our skin and in our mouths, noses, and genitalia and guts. And by the way, most of the people don't realize this, but when you smell, I mean, when your mouth smells, when your armpit smells, your groin smells, that's because of bacteria mixing with sweat. And each body's different. Now, if you keep a healthy diet and you keep yourself really filled with nice, healthy juices and you keep yourself hygienic, you don't have any smells. But if you don't, you do. And in which case, you can harbor bacteria that just keeps regrowing and regrowing because you're not changing the milieu. So anyhow, a team of researchers at Duke University has tracked how this microbial evolution unfolded using mathematical tools originally developed for geologists. The scientists identified microbes that diverged into new species as they colonized one area of the body after another. Their study provides a new way of looking at complicated microbial data to tease out the evolution of the bacteria associated with our bodies. And, quote from the study, over the last decade, there has been significant interest in developing probiotics and transplants of beneficial bacteria to treat a wide variety of health issues. And so these people did exactly that. Our analysis gives us a window into how different bacteria adapt and evolve so we can more effectively predict which implanted species will survive to make an impact on disease. End quote. Only recently have scientists begun to appreciate just how much our health depends upon the trillions, tens of trillions, hundreds of trillions of bacteria. You have 100 times more bacteria in your body than you do cells. That our bacteria call our body home. We now know that these bacteria help digest the food we eat, boost our brain function, regulate our immune systems. But figuring out how our bacteria, which by some accounts number 10 to 1, evolved to live with each other and communicate with each other, that's what the game is about. And that's what they looked at, and that's what they found. So here's what I found. And I found this out from two people early in my career. First, it was my great aunt, and she was a vegan, and she ran the whole farm herself for the last part of her life. During the Great Depression, my mother and my mother's brothers and sisters, of which there were 9, lived there along with other people, and they didn't like it because it was a rough life. They had always had food. They had, they had a place to stay, but she was a disciplinarian. They didn't like that. She got them up early in the morning, got them out there working, and she made sure that every day they had a glass of, and my mother recalls this and how she hated it, but she would make a combination of beets. She would press them in a press, an actual press. She would press down the beets, get a big bag of beets, wash the beets, and then press them. And out come all this juice. She'd collect the juice, and then she fermented cabbage, and she got sauerkraut. And then she would give the sauerkraut juice or the cabbage juice, combination, beet and cabbage together, cabbage juice together. And that kept them healthy. Well, she was giving them a massive amount of probiotics and prebiotics. And that was very important. And then she would also give them some cauliflower oil, 1 tablespoon of cauliflower oil every day. My mom said she didn't like getting up there because they all had to stand in line because she didn't trust them. My Aunt Myrtle wouldn't trust it. They'd take it otherwise. And say, open your mouth, and then goes the spoon. And she would mix the whole combination with some fresh raw honey and drink it down to make it palatable. And everybody stayed healthy, strong immune systems. My great aunt also believed that being in a barn around animals and nature, playing in the dirt, you would build up a strong immune system. Boy, was she right. City dwellers who are germophobic frequently have very compromised immune systems. You need to be facing the world you're in and be able to take on the bacteria, and in a good way that becomes a very important part of your immune system. I remember I was doing some research with Guy Richards. Guy Richards was a former editor, or city editor for the New York Herald Tribune, one of America's and New York's great old newspapers. We were working on the Romanoff case. It was his contention, along with some research scholars, Peter Bessel, the Speller sons, that the royal family, the Romanovs, did not die in Ekaterinburg. They were not killed, but rather they escaped and went through Odessa, and then they were tracked. And I wrote on this. I worked on this. That was a part of my early work. Wonderful experiences meeting all these old white Russians who were in their 90s and had been members of the royal family, the Tsar Nicholas II. So I got all these wonderful stories sitting up in Bedford with Maria Kropotkin. And she was telling me all about what it was like to grow up at the court of, the one you see in the movies, Nicholas and Alexandra, and all the intrigues and who was sabotaging who. And so I had a chance to interview dozens of these people. Well, Guy Richards, who was a great editor, was really involved in this research as well. And he had terrible ulcers. And in our first meetings, he was coughing blood. And the doctor said there was nothing they can do about it. So I said, well, would you try something? He said, sure. So I gave him beet juice and cabbage juice. I said, drink this 16-ounce glass 3 times a day. And I also put in there some honey, but I had raw Tupelo honey. I didn't have Manuka honey. And some vitamin C with quercetin. Well, in about 3 weeks, he says, something remarkable. I don't have any more pain. And the doctor says my ulcers are healing up. I said, well, good. And it was just one of the things I've seen. I've seen a lot of intestinal problems and inflammations, diverticulitis, spastic colon, really improve with cabbage juice and or sauerkraut juice. Either one. One is fermented, one is not. Cabbage juice is just cabbage juice, which is very powerful. And the other is fermented cabbage, which is sauerkraut juice. They're both great for you. But beets are also terrific. So that was how I saw that it worked. And then I interviewed, I think it was about 1972, a man named Shurtleff, who had written a book about fermented foods in Japan and how there was a long history of how the Japanese used miso, natto, and other ferments to help with their health. And boy, were they right. They were way ahead of everyone. So get your fermented foods, get your prebiotics, and they're going to help all the bacteria in your body, and that's important. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I really enjoy thinking about the times that we go out discoing all three or four times a week and all the parties we had for the listeners in this audience. Over 50,000, that's 50,000 people attended the dance parties over the 35 years. I'll do another one when I come back from my trip. I'll also be sharing some insights from what I can only briefly discuss as my efforts to help the Syrian refugees. More details on that and how the goal, I believe, will be achieved of having 1,400 refugees in one camp have 100% of all their fruits and vegetables every day, organic, locally grown, and as well as everyone getting all full-spectrum vitamins and a meal replacer, all free to them, and to save some lives and improve their health. So more on that in the near future. We're going to go now to hear what happens when, with possibly the best of intentions, doctors and public health officials recommend a vaccine schedule, including the human papillomavirus vaccine or Gardasil, without taking the time to do the homework, the real research. And here are the consequences. This is one young girl talking about what she experienced, and the woman that you hear her responding to was the one who heads the whole vaccine program for the country of Ireland. And I'll repeat, if you can't really understand it all, it's very poor audio quality because it wasn't done in a microphone. It was just done with someone's cell phone. Please listen. It's only a minute and a half.
Hi, I'm Rebecca. I'm one of the girls who reacted to the vaccine. I have four doctors treating me for vaccine injury. I just was wondering, do you feel guilty for promoting this vaccine that has left so many girls out of school, wheelchair bound, and just basically don't have a life?
It's just about that thalidomide. Sorry, no, come on. Let's be respectful to the lady asking the question, okay?
I think he is being...
I thought you were leaving.
Well, I had to come back because you stopped the live feed, so I had to come back up to hear you.
Well, could you please, out of respect to your peers in the audience, please keep your thoughts to yourself.
Sorry, but you weren't even asked the question. Nobody asked you.
Sorry. Do you feel guilty just for promoting this so more girls end up like me, in a wheelchair, not attending school?
I can't say anything to you other than I'm, you know, you'd have to have a heart of stone not to feel deeply for the situation you're in. So let's not run away from that. This is
do you feel guilty, yes or no?
No, I don't feel guilty.
So you're fine with more girls turning out like this? Chronic pain. So you're fine with that? You can have that on your conscience.
I'm advocate for women's health.
Yes. So, yeah, you're saying more girls are allowed to get sick.
Shame on you. Shame on you. And don't interrupt.
I'm
right?
Sorry, but you have me on. Sorry, you would get your chance at the microphone.
She just told that girl that she doesn't care what happened to her, right? She's still here proposing what happened to that girl. Shame on you.
Okay, everybody, could we have a little bit of calm, please?
Okay. You heard it. Now, think of Dr. Pam out in California. Think of Dr. Paul Offit. Maybe they sincerely believe that vaccines are what we need to prevent disease. But think of all the doctors who question why we have an epidemic of autism that we have never had in our American history. And it started at the same identical time that the increasing schedule of vaccines have occurred. And yet they're not apologizing. None of the so-called health experts in the media are apologizing for promoting vaccines, but they've gone one step further. They're not just promoting vaccines, which is their right, but they're attacking anyone who challenges it. That is a very different situation. And the mainstream media, as I mentioned in a commentary two days ago, the mainstream media is the only source of truth in the United States for most people. So if you believe the New York Times and you have to believe that Russia is this terrible country run by this terrible person and that we should not just sanction them but probably bomb them and start another war, you have to believe that's true, but you also understand this is the same paper that told us weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were true and that Libya and Gaddafi were killing his own people, which is true, and Saddam Hussein was using gas on his people. Of course, none of this was true. So what does it say about our incompatibility with truth? We have learned in our society to live with the illusion of everything, the illusion that public health, science, exist. It does not. There is no such thing as public health science. It does not exist. What we do have is we have illusion, and when some child can no longer walk and has no longer a future life and will die young, that woman is not willing to say she's sorry. She may feel empathy, but she will not reverse herself because then she would have to question the mandate that a lot of other girls are going to end up like her. And that's happening in the United States, but they have no voice. So my new documentary, which I'm out filming right now as we speak, and I'll have finished, all my principal filming will be done within the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I'm filming up at MIT, I'm filming in Canada, in France. Then you'll see the hardest hitting documentary ever. I'm not allowing anyone to be filmed who was not pro-vaccine and has spent at least 10,000 hours doing research before they've come to their decisions they're no longer pro-vaccine. So I'm using hardcore pro-vaccine scientists only to make the argument that we have no safe vaccines, not one, nor efficacious. You'll see this in the upcoming film. It was F. Somerset Maugham who said it is dangerous to let the public behind the scenes. They are easily disillusioned and then they are angry with you before it was the illusion they loved. And that is the same illusion they love with Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, with the CIA, with the FBI, with reality television. They love illusion. Reality, not so much. Now let's go over and listen in to an animation short on nuclear weapons.
August 9th, 1945. The Nagasaki nuclear explosion. August 6th, 1945. The Hiroshima nuclear explosion. Since these World War II attacks, nuclear weapons have become even more powerful. The Hiroshima bomb produced an explosion of 15 kilotons. One kiloton equals the explosive power of 1,000 tons of TNT. If it was detonated in New York City's Times Square, this is what it would look like. The radius of the affected area would be almost a mile long. This yellow circle indicates the radius of the explosion's fireball. Within the red circle, fatalities are near 100%, and all concrete structures are damaged or demolished. Within the gray circle, most residential structures are destroyed, and there are massive injuries and fatalities. The orange circle indicates the area in which third-degree radiation burns occur. But the sheer destructive power of that explosion pales in comparison to the largest thermonuclear weapon currently in the United States arsenal, the B-83. Created in the late 1970s, the B-83 can produce an explosion of up to 1,200 kilotons, which is 80 times the Hiroshima explosion. That's the explosive power of 1.2 million tons of TNT. If dropped on New York City, the radius of the affected area would be over 7 miles. Then, there's the 1954 Operation Castle Bravo, the largest nuclear bomb ever tested by the United States. It produced a 15,000 kiloton explosion, which is over 1,000 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. If detonated in New York City, the radius of the affected area would be over 21 miles. But there's even one more powerful than that. On October 30th, 1961, the Soviet Union tested the Tsar Bomba. It is the most powerful weapon ever detonated. It produced a 50,000 kiloton explosion. That's 3,300 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. The mushroom cloud was so tall that it dwarfed anything on Earth. If dropped on New York City, the radius of the affected area would be over 31 miles. The Tsar Bomba was created over 5 decades ago. Today, there are an estimated 14,900 nuclear weapons in the world. If not for the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty of 1963, we might have even more powerful bombs today.
Let's think about that for a moment. You have nearly 20,000 nuclear weapons today, and yet the person who won the Nobel Peace Prize did decide, to spend $1 trillion. Mind you, $1 trillion is only what was offered. It is always at least double that, so $2 trillion, enough to rebuild our entire infrastructure in the United States. But instead of putting money into the infrastructure, instead of de-ghettoizing a single block on a single city in any suburb or main city street, it all went to nuclear. That means it went to a group, a consortium of nuclear contractors who lobbied the president, who supported the president in the campaigns that he ran. So we have 20,000 nuclear weapons. You're going to build a whole new generation of nuclear weapons, and you're not going to get rid of the old generation of nuclear weapons. And then you do not have Israel abide by any of the International Nuclear Regulatory Commission's standards. They're a rogue state. So what's the likelihood if you're posturing against Russia and you're putting fortifications all around, over 60 different military bases around Iran, and now using NATO to completely surround half of Russia, what's the likelihood of having a nuclear conflict? Very high. Why isn't this an important issue? Why isn't anyone talking about completely eliminating all nuclear weapons in the world? That should be a major concern. But it's not. Not right now, and that's unfortunate. And finally, I want to go on audio clips. I was going to go to the left is no longer liberal, but I want to give you more background on what I consider a man you should know more about, Steve Bannon. He is to Trump what Karl Rove was to George Bush. Karl Rove was called Bush's brain, and I would say the same concerning Steve Bannon better know who he is and better know what he believes in, because he's really the shadow president and he represents the deep state.
There's one person other than Trump who's gained a surprisingly huge amount of political power over the past year. It's Steve Bannon.
The right-wing ideologue is most notorious for his role as former executive chairman of Breitbart News, a website that he dubbed the platform of the alt-right, and hosts stories like these. Bannon's candid about his lust for power, quoted as saying, "Darth Vader, Dick Cheney, Satan, that's power." As Trump's ineptitude and lack of political ideology becomes increasingly obvious, many have noticed that there are other forces steering the ship. While the Christian right is one sector of the right-wing establishment guiding his policies, the alt-right has their own influence in the White House, namely through Steve Bannon. He's been called the intellectual force behind Trump's agenda.
And in just mere months, he's propelled himself from right-wing media outlier to top propagandist of the U.S. empire as Trump's chief strategist. That means Bannon is the number one person who Trump relies on to guide his every move, just like Karl Rove served as the brain for George W. Bush.
David Duke, the former Ku Klux Klan imperial wizard, said of Bannon, "You have an individual who's basically creating the ideological aspects of where we're going. An ideology, ultimately, is the most important aspect of any government." Bannon's power grab hasn't gone unnoticed. As Trump spends the majority of his time tweeting, watching news about himself, and golfing at the lavish Mar-a-Lago resort, there's a big void for Bannon to fill.
So who is this mysterious man behind the curtain? Well, Bannon's story really starts with a youthful lust for war.
Bannon credits his formative political development to his time in the U.S. Navy. He served from 1976 to 1983, mostly on a ship as a pampered officer. It was on this ship that Bannon's thirst for military supremacy and war was fully formed. While he never served in war himself, he lamented his missed opportunity as a political turning point. While Bannon was at sea, the Empire was hard at work trying to strangle the Iranian Revolution, which had deposed U.S.-backed dictator the Shah, famous for chilling torture and executions of political opponents. The Pentagon was planning a military assault on Tehran, which ended in embarrassment, and ultimately was pulled back by Carter. Bannon bitterly sailed on in the lonely seas. Becoming more reactionary over the incident, he developed a fawning loyalty to Reagan, and even attended his victory party in uniform. He ended up working in the Pentagon under Reagan. Although he left the military, his love for war never ceased. Bannon's longtime writing partner and former close friend, Julia Jones, said, "Steve is a strong militarist. He's in love with war. It's almost poetry to him." But apparently Navy life was below Bannon, even with his preferred commander-in-chief. In 1984, he moved on to more lucrative adventures as an investment banker at financial behemoth Goldman Sachs. He got the job like most who exist in this world of privilege, meeting the son of a Goldman Sachs executive. He stayed at Goldman for 6 years before he recruited his banker pals to found his own investment firm, Bannon and Company, which bankrolled media corporations. The industry cashed in big with Clinton's 1996 Telecommunications Act, which allowed media companies to be gobbled up into massive monopolies. 2 years later, Bannon sold his firm to a bigger media giant. This gave him the lavish wealth to focus on his true passion, making apocalyptic, right-wing propaganda films.
There shall be open borders. And it's just nuts.
What would have happened if a senator was killed by Armando Garcia?
His movies over the years cover an array of far-right dystopian fantasies that depict a society in collapse, invaded by criminal armies.
The cartel controlled everything.
Whoa. Dang.
Bannon's political films were never successful outside the dark circles of Tea Party types. So in 2004, he took a more lucrative position at a peculiar company.
Internet Gaming Entertainment. IGE was based on exploiting internet games like World of Warcraft, paying thousands of people to drone away at mining virtual resources so that they could be sold to other players. Brought in for his banker connections, IGE's investment paid off well. As one industry expert pointed out, Bannon managed to convince Goldman Sachs to plow $60 million into a company that sold imaginary goods in an imaginary world.
In addition to the bizarre nature of their profits, Bannon was making money for highly problematic people.
IGE was an investment project of Mark Collins Rector, a fugitive on the run for child rape and human trafficking. In fact, all three heads of the firm were sued for sexual abuse of underage boys, including the founder and CEO of IGE. A year after Bannon secured the investment, the company tanked, embroiled in shady dealings in a class action lawsuit brought by gamers. As the company went down in flames, its remnants became Affinity Media. Bannon had the CEO ousted and replaced with himself. He stayed in this position until leaving for Breitbart in 2012.
Considering Bannon's lack of ethics in his professional life, it's not surprising that his personal life is also marred with scandal.
Like several members of the Trump administration, Bannon has a disturbing history of alleged domestic abuse. Details from the second of his three marriages reveal what kind of man Bannon really is. In 1995, he married Mary Louise Picard, only 3 days before she gave birth to their twins. According to Picard, he wouldn't marry her until the babies were proven to be, quote, normal. In the divorce documents, Picard wrote, "Bannon made it clear that he would not marry me just because I was pregnant. I was scheduled for an amniocentesis and was told by the respondent that if the babies were normal, we would get married. Even though the babies were normal, Bannon didn't seem to pay much attention to them, as he made them wear costumes to tell them apart and repeatedly refused to pay them child support."
Less than a year into their marriage, a violent incident happened that could be best explained through the police report itself.
According to the report, Bannon got angry at his wife for making noise while feeding their newborn twins. When she asked him for money to buy groceries, a fight erupted and carried out onto the driveway. The fight culminated with Bannon becoming violent, grabbing her wrists and neck, and, quote, pulled her down as if he was trying to pull her into the car, over the door. When she broke free to try to call 911, Bannon jumped over her and the twins to grab the phone from her. "I took the phone to call the police, and he grabbed the phone away from me, throwing it across the room and breaking it as he was screaming that I was a crazy effing C," the document states. Police verified the abuse, writing, "I saw red marks on her left wrist and the right side of her neck. These were photographed." According to a study in the Journal of Emergency Medicine, women who have been strangled by their partner are 7 times more likely to be killed than other victims of domestic violence. The same study shows that 43% of women murdered in domestic assaults had been strangled by their partner in the previous year. According to the officer on the scene, she broke down and admitted that their turbulent 6-year relationship had been plagued with physical violence early on. Bannon was arrested for misdemeanor domestic violence, battery, and witness intimidation. Picard filed a restraining order and divorced him, but Bannon was never convicted because Picard didn't show up for court. Later, she revealed that Bannon and his lawyers had threatened to ruin her life if she pursued charges. Bannon retained visitation rights of their children. Yet just months later, when the babies were only 17 months old, he was caught hitting one of them. Picard then requested visitation in public spaces only, because she said he was verbally abusive in front of their kids, and she did not feel safe. He's also been charged with crude verbal abuse against female employees. When one female worker challenged his leadership, he reportedly called her a bimbo and threatened to, quote, kick her ass. But his relationships and Wall Street career have always come second to his drive for political influence. Throughout his years as a propagandist, Bannon hitched his wagon to things he thought would elevate his views. When the Tea Party movement emerged, Bannon praised it as the vanguard of a new American revolution. When Sarah Palin came on the scene, Bannon was so enthused by her popularity, he created an entire film about her. Considering Palin herself isn't even interviewed in the film, it's unknown whether Bannon actually saw her as a visionary political leader.
"The man can only ride you when your back is bent, so strengthen it."
Or if she was just a convenient vehicle for his own vision. This strategy of riding a fringe character to power didn't succeed with Palin, but it would with Trump. But nowhere would Bannon's quest for political influence be realized more than at Breitbart News. Bannon developed a friendship with Andrew Breitbart in the early 2000s through a shared love of arch-reactionary media. Breitbart even had a cute nickname for Bannon, the Leni Riefenstahl of the Tea Party movement. Riefenstahl was a Nazi filmmaker known for creating some of Hitler's most iconic propaganda. The comparison was meant as a compliment.
When Bannon became a protege of Andrew Breitbart, he entered into a fringe circle with enormous sway over the beliefs of millions of disparate white men. Andrew Breitbart's credited for changing the way media is consumed, helping launch huge websites like Huffington Post with good friend at the time Arianna Huffington, and of course his own website, Breitbart News.
Breitbart was a protege of Matt Drudge, creator and
There's another 15 minutes of this. You can go to my website, progressiveradionetwork.com or garynall.com, download it and listen. But at least it gives you an idea of the person that's really second only to Trump in power in the United States. But he's smarter than Trump. Then again, I have a parakeet smarter than Trump. So that's not a big stretch. But just understand what kind of characters we have running our country. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to do some talk back. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And I also want to, in a moment, I'm going to share some thoughts from Henry Giroux. I have a commentary I'm going to share. We're going to be back in a moment. Please stay with us. Tell me you don't want to feel that rhythm. Yes, that's why I select the music. Put us in a nice mood. Before we go to our commentaries and your calls on TalkBack, I want to share something for the men in this audience and the women who have men in your lives who want a little more passion. There's a certain feeling that comes over men when they no longer have the energy, the desires they once had. They rarely speak about it. They frequently would just kind of find other hobbies or things to take its place. Men don't have the same capacity as women just to be open and honest about what's wrong. So I've come up with a solution. First and foremost, I want men to start drinking more beet juice. That's a real important thing that can help them. And also I have two products that I created specifically for men. One is called Men Stuff. And by the way, in my travels around the world, I would ask a question. What do the men in your society use for particular issues? And they'd tell me. I'd then go to the scientific literature to see could I find scientific verification. And indeed, in most cases, you can. So after a long period of time, I put together two different products. One's a powder, the other's a tablet. In the powder, which tastes good, I put in there what is called, and by the way, this is probably the number one used ingredients by people in South America, Muira, M-U-I-R-A, Puama, P-U-A-M-A, Tribulus, Schisandra, Maca root, Ginkgo, Longjack, that's 100-to-1 ratio in there, which means it's very powerful. Nettle root extract, yohimbe, ashwagandha, horny goat weed extract, which is just absolutely all over the Mediterranean. Everywhere I went, they talk about horny goat weed. Eulithococcus sinicosus, that was from China. Panax ginseng, Japan. Apple, GMO-free soy lecithin, banana, cacao, which is chocolate. Oat beta-glucan, and Damiana, sweetened with stevia. And that's it. I mean, yeah, it's got 18 grams fiber. I don't care about the fiber in here. You're not using this for the fiber. You're using this for something altogether different. So it's called Men Stuff, and it really works. One day I'm coming downstairs. This goes back a couple years, 2 years ago, and at 83rd and Broadway, where we had our offices for, I don't know, 20, 25 years, and there was a line, and it was a long line of men. And so I walked by, how's it going? Everybody said, oh, da-da-da. And someone, I think it was Neil at the vitamin closet said, Gary, I said, yeah, I walked around. He said, we're out of rock hard. I said, so? So order more. He said, all these guys are here for rock hard. I said, so I went out to ask him. I said, you all here for rock hard? Yeah, we're here for rock hard. Why are you here for rock? It works. It works. All right. So I said, well, what we'll do is because you all came in, I know where there's some extra at another place. So I got it from a warehouse and brought it back about an hour later. So I got another thing. This has been around for a while. I created this about, I guess, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I forgot about it. And until someone recently reminded me of how important it was. Now, Rock Hard has got oat straw, saw palmetto, ependium, which is a very important herb that no one ever uses. I do for this. Lycium berries, fresh ashwagandha root, velvet bean seed, anise seed, cardamom seed, cinnamon bark, oat straw, salt palmetto berry, yohimbe. It's got everything that I could think of that was really important. So you got a tablet and you got the powder. You can take them both. And they're on sale. We got a really great special for you today. We're calling this our Men's Stuff and Rock Hard Special. It's normally, for the two, $171.98 or $172. It's yours for $99.99. That's it. You're saving $72. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And we make these in very small quantities, like 500 bottles, so it's always kept fresh. 877-627-5065. And see if this doesn't make a difference for you. All right? Rock hard and men's stuff together for the men in the audience or the women who would like to encourage in a positive, healthy way what many men are lacking. Now they have an alternative. We're going to take some calls and see what's on your mind. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey, your turn.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for the show today. And I'd like to talk about geoengineering the Earth's upper atmosphere. I know you've talked about it in the past. And we know that our use of fossil fuels, especially the burning of coal, oil, and methane, is responsible for driving global temperatures to new heights. And rather than see a reduction in their use, these greenhouse gas-producing companies are turning to geoengineering to slow climate destabilization. The idea is to use a fleet of modified business jets and or high-altitude balloons to inject a reflective aerosol into the Earth's upper atmosphere to cool the planet. Geoengineering the Earth's upper atmosphere would dramatically reduce the amount of sunlight filtering down to the planet's surface, which would reduce the worldwide shift towards solar power, as well as potentially destroy the ozone layer. And with the arrival of the fossil fuel-friendly Trump administration, it's time to take a look at this under-the-radar science, look at it very seriously if we want to see our solar industry grow and prosper in the coming years. And your audience can go to geoengineering for more information.
Harvey, thank you. I appreciate that. I intend on doing a two-hour special on geoengineering and saving the planet on an upcoming Progressive Commentary Hour. So we will deal with that in depth very shortly. Appreciate your call. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Stay tuned for Utrice Lead right now.